And welcome back to the Learning Man Podcast. Today we have an incredible story of resilience, of tragedy. We're going to be talking to Zach Paul, who spent his life trying to prove others wrong and to prove himself right in becoming an American hero, a U.S. Navy SEAL. And unfortunately, that dream was cut short by a drunk driver. He is a brain injury survivor. He is now a life coach. And he is an expert on keeping anxiety at bay. You're not going to want to miss this. Just as a trigger warning, this particular episode talks about anxiety and suicide. If this is something that triggers you, you may want to skip this one and listen to another episode of The Learning Man. This is The Learning Man. And welcome back to the podcast. Today on The Learning Man, we've got Mr. Zach Paul. Zach Paul is, he's got an extraordinary story. He went through the ranks within the U.S. Navy, ended up being a U.S. Navy SEAL, and had a traumatic life event that changed the trajectory of his life. Today we're going to be talking about anxiety and the coma, and please welcome to the show Mr. Zach Paul. Hey, Zach, how are you?
Doing great, Omar. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for making time, man. I know it was a short notice, and we got introduced by a mutual friend who recently came onto the podcast, and he told me your story, man, and I had to capture it. And I know that you're going to be traveling soon, so thanks for fitting me into your day.
Yeah, man, for sure. Appreciate you having me on. And if I've found one thing, there's a cliche saying, but that's like success loves speed. So whenever the option is, oh, do I do it later? Do I do it next week? Or do I do it now? Just always do it now. Always do it now.
I love that. I'm gonna use that in my repertoire, I think. Awesome. Yeah, for sure. So Zach, you've got a crazy story, and you've got, and I definitely wanted to capture this because I know that this is going to, you know, definitely resonate with other people. I know that you kind of struggled as a skinny, lanky kid, which for me, myself, that was never the case. I always had to, you know, shop in the Husky section of the jeans, you know, at JCPenney and Sears. And you kind of took it upon yourself you wanted to prove something to yourself, to your family, to everyone that, you know, you wanted to be the best of the best. And so that's the reason why you went to the Navy SEALs. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And we all go through it, right? Whatever it is, you know, nobody just has a perfect life and everything goes smoothly, right? So if you struggle with being husky, for me, it was being skinny, you know, and the kids at school, you know, I got bullied relentlessly. You know, they called me skinny bones, rat boy, all sorts of cute nicknames like kids do. You know, the worst bullies are actually like the prettiest girls too, who like, I really, you know, my crush was like just absolutely savage to me. So I always struggled. I never felt like a man. You know, I struggled to make friends. I struggled to feel worthy. And even as I got older, you know, I never really felt like a man. I never felt confident. I had self-doubt. I had fear. I had anxiety, like anger, frustration towards the world. Like you name it, I was just this cocktail of darkness and negativity. And if you'd seen me in high school, you know, I was a 115-pound emo kid that wore eyeliner and black makeup. So wow. It's, you know, I definitely had a chip on my shoulder. And I decided to seek out the military because the military, college wasn't for me at the time. I said, you know what? I want to become a man. I want to get out. I want to see my home world, or see my, get out of my hometown and see the world. And oh yeah, I'm really, really pissed off. So give me a job where I can get a gun, go kick in doors and fuck people up and get paid and medals for it and be respected for it. You know, that's how I was thinking at the time. So I went to it from a pretty dark place, and there was this chip on my shoulder of, you know, okay, everybody doubted me. Everybody made fun of me. Everybody didn't think I would be anything. Like, fuck you, watch me. Right. If there was a, can I swear on this?
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it.
Should ask a second ago, but if there was a slogan for my life, it would be fuck you, watch me. Right. I take the haters and the doubters and everybody that said I couldn't do it and everybody who thought I'd be a failure, called me a loser, all of that. I stuff that down and I use it as fuel. And I say, cool, watch me. And that's potent, right? That's rocket fuel towards actually achieving and working on things if you use it that way.
Wow. Sorry to interject. For the audience and for you as well, Zach, if you hear screaming in the background, it's my daughter. She's 10 months old and she's going crazy out there. She's teething. So that's what's going on in the background.
No worries. But if you hear screaming in my background, I don't know anything about that.
You know, going, you know, we like to kind of go in kind of chronological order and kind of like explore different sections of our upbringing and what has made us, you know, high performance individuals. So with you, it was kind of like you kind of felt like an outcast, right? You kind of felt like, you know, the skinny kid that was being, you know, picked on by the pretty girls, girls that you might have had crushes on, you know, coming up, and you kind of expressed that in a very dark way. What was, you know, was there any kind of like changing point kind of that switched on, like were you just kind of getting up to graduation and you just decided, okay, well, you know, I'm pissed off at the world and, you know, I'm going to go and join the military and blow shit up? Or was it something else that was kind of like a trigger point that kind of lit the flame?
Yeah. So the military appealed to me for a number of reasons, right? I always thought it was fun to play army. I liked watching the war movies when I was younger. I was just kind of fascinated by violence. Being a insecure kid who didn't know the first thing about violence, you know, it was this foreign world to me, this different world of masculinity that I'd never been part of. You know, I took some martial arts classes when I was younger, but Taekwondo is hardly real violence. You know, I glorified movies like Troy and 300, and I just love this warrior's way of life. And the real turning point for me, though, was I was in a bookstore, and I saw this book with a picture of a military helicopter on the front of it. It was called Robert's Ridge. It was the story of the first Navy SEALs killed in Afghanistan. I bought it on the spot and read it cover to cover, and my mind was made up. You know, I was blown away by the stories of courage and brotherhood and sacrifice and heroism, and this idea that these guys were part of something bigger than themselves, and they were willing to risk their lives and run out into open gunfire on the top of a fucking mountain in Afghanistan. And the fact that these guys were willing to die for their brothers and be part of that purpose just resonated with me at such a deep level. And you know, I'd never been in touch with my masculinity. You know, I have a dad and I have a great relationship with him. He taught me a lot of different things about life, but I've always felt like that piece was missing, right? That really masculine edge wasn't there. So, you know, my mind was made up that I'm going to become a Navy SEAL or die trying. But problem being, I was 115 pounds soaking wet and I didn't have any athletic background. You know, I had no business going into the toughest military training on the planet. So this was the time that for the first time in my life, I sought out help, right? It's very, very hard. It's the hardest thing in the world, I would actually say, for a man to admit that he needs help with something and then go out and ask for that help, right? We have pride, we have ego, we're told to suck it up, figure it out, man up, you know, we're told all these different things. So for a man to say, you know what, I can't do this on my own, I do need some help and I need some help from someone who's been there, it's a scary thing. And there have been a couple times in my life that's actually been a very pivotal decision. But this first one was going out and finding a mentor. And I actually found through doing my research on these forums, that one of the guys, there's an ex-SEAL that ran a CrossFit gym 10 minutes from where my parents lived, where I was living at the time. And so I drove in there and, you know, me skinny kid walks up, hey, I'm looking for Dan. Yeah, Dan, what do you want? I'm going to be a SEAL. All right, really? Like you, skinny motherfucker? Yeah, I am. Okay, cool. See these guys working out? Yeah, go do this workout. Lift that weight, climb the rope, do the squats. Well, you know, these days I can lift pretty heavy weights. Like I've built up, but the very first time that I ever tried to do a squat, I fell on my ass. There was no weight. It was just me like squatting down and sitting back up. Like I fell hard, sprawled out on the floor, but I got back up. Then I fell again and I got back up. I tried to climb a rope, fell, got back up. And I lost track of how many times I fell, but every time I failed, I would still get back up and try again. Until he walks over to me and he says, stop. You're weak and pathetic and you have no business being here. but I can tell you've got the heart for this. So I'll train you. Be here at 6 a.m. tomorrow. And if you're going to be late, don't even bother showing up. And so I spent the next year training, you know, like a Rocky montage out of an 80s movie or something, where I'd just show up. Yeah. I mean, I'd show up early in the morning and I'd be doing 3-day workouts, getting, you know, yelled at and push-ups and garden hose in the face and put in the cold lake and all the things that I'd kind of come to expect from SEAL training. And over the course of a year, I got stronger. I got faster. I built confidence. I built mental toughness and resilience. And I built all these things. And this guy actually became a second father figure to me in a lot of ways. And, you know, in society, we used to have this idea that, like, it takes a village, right? The tribe raises the children, the tribe raises boys. And boys used to have this rite of passage where we would go out and, you know, depending on the culture, go out and stay out for 7 days or go out and hunt your first lion or whatever it was. And if you passed, you came back to the tribe as a man. And if you failed, you were lion food. So that was really what this experience was for me. And I know in a lot of ways we've gotten away from that in society. And I think that's part of the reason that so many boys are lost and don't feel like men. And even though we have guys who are legally adults, like, they're still lacking this masculine edge. And I talk to them all the time, like, yeah, everything's good. Money's good. I'm successful, but I don't feel like a man. It's because we haven't gone through this rite of passage, right? This moment where we transcend from boyhood to manhood. And to do that, it really does take a father figure, another man who's been there and can push you and give you the tough love and what you need to really break through and make that transformation. But for me, that's what this period was like.
Wow. So, yeah, and I completely agree. Like, back in the old days, I mean, there was kind of like a community of men. You know, you always hear the saying, well, it takes a village to raise a child, and nowadays it's just not like that anymore. You know, it's just very, I guess, isolated in the way that, you know, especially young men are being brought up, you know. And, you know, especially for me, like, I didn't know growing up, I thought everybody was raised the exact same way that I was raised. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't realize that there was different ways of upbringing. So you finally, you bust your ass this entire time. And just so the audience knows, how tall are you?
I'm 5'10".
So 5'10". So, like, regular, you know, regular size, but back then you weren't, right? You were a lot smaller, and you just kept at it until you finally, you know, got in to, and what was like that? Like, once you were in the Navy SEALs, like, what did it, well, one, what did it take to get into it? Like physically, like, what did you have to prepare for? And then once you were in, what was that training like?
Yeah. So to get into it is highly competitive. You know, it's the toughest training in the world. And this is, you know, fairly after 9/11, right? When patriotism is at a high and the war on terror, and we're sick of seeing terrorists blow up innocent women and children on the news every day, right? So there was a demand for this, right? There's guys, lots of guys out there that wanted to go become SEALs. You know, everyone has their reasons, right? We as Americans like to think that it's all for truly noble reasons, such as defending the country or spreading freedom. But when it gets down to it, everybody has their personal reasons. But regardless, you know, guys show up to do a job. So it's, you know, you have to pass some minimum physical standards. You have to run a certain amount of time, you know, or my distance in a time. You have to do some push-ups, swim, pull-ups, sit-ups. There's psychological evals, right? They want to make sure you're crazy, but not too crazy. And it's very, very selective. So back when I went through, you know, by the time I'd passed all these qualifications, it was a year-long waiting list for me to even ship off to boot camp. Now I can't even imagine how long it is, probably years and years and years now. And it only gets more and more competitive. So, but, you know, the day comes, I ship off to boot camp. Boot camp is the most boring thing I've ever done in my life. It's 2 months of learning how to fold your clothes and shut up and march in formation, which to me, I never did well in school. I never liked being told to sit down and shut up. So boot camp was my literal living hell. But you know, you get through it, right? One day at a time. Next thing I know, I'm showing up to SEAL training, which is every bit as awful as it's made out to be. You know, it lives up to the hype. It's just as cold. It's just as miserable. You know, the pressure is there. It's, you know, it's designed to weed out those who don't want to be there. So we showed up with 255 guys, and, you know, 5 weeks later at the end of Hell Week, which Hell Week's a, if you are not familiar, it's a 5.5 day segment. It's 1 week where you don't sleep. You move the entire time. It's designed to just beat the absolute shit out of you and then push you to beyond your breaking point and see, does this guy have what it takes to be there, or is he going to break? You know, it will find your weakness. It will exploit your weakness and really, really test everything you have. And some people show up there to test themselves, right? And those people tend to quit. Mm-hmm. Some people show up there to, you know, they wanted to try it out because they thought it looked cool on the recruiting poster, as a couple of the guys mentioned, right? They quit, right? The only way to actually make it through is you hear all sorts of stuff. I'm telling you, dude, all sorts of stuff. You know, you hear it all.
I saw Tom Cruise do it once.
Yeah, right. It looked cool in the movies. Right? I want the sunglasses. Yeah. Right. Like, you know, but the only way to actually get through SEAL training, right? The only way to do it, if you still want to be standing there by the end of Hell Week, is you've got to flip that switch and decide that I'm going to do this no matter what. And if I die, I die. You know, as my mentor always said, right? Like, they're not going to kill you. And if they do, the pain stops anyways. So I'm like, okay, cool. So it's just making that decision, right? It's a decision to still be there, to go through it, and to no matter what happens, to keep pushing forward and grind through it and make it through. So, you know, I get through Hell Week and I'm on top of the world. And, you know, there's some speed bumps. There's some ups and downs. I got injured, got a little bit of trouble, like ups and downs. But, you know, next thing I know, I'm on track, right? I'm on track. I'm well on my way to completing training. And this is when disaster strikes. And so imagine being on top of the world, right? You are gone through Hell Week. You're tough. You're going back into training. You're like, you're ready for it. You go out at night, you're out partying with your friends and you meet some girl at the bar, decide to take her home, feeling on top of the world. And then next thing you know, waking up in the hospital with it felt like I was dying. Like the pain in my head was unbearable. I felt like somebody was drilling into my skull with a power tool. I was confused. I didn't know where I was or what I was supposed to be doing. Come to find out that I'd been hit by a drunk driver while I was in the crosswalk. So I'm on foot, drunk guy blows through an intersection going about 40 miles an hour, strikes me, my feet left the ground, my head was the first thing to hit the concrete, and lights out for 3 days. So I come out of this and I'm just devastated. It doesn't even begin to describe it, right? This dream, and keep in mind, I have not completed SEAL training yet, right? I am not, like, I did not complete SEAL training, right? I did not wear the title of Navy SEAL.
I think I lost you, Zach.
Oh, no.
So there you go.
How about now? Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha.
What was the last thing you heard?
Your head was the first thing to hit.
Yeah. So, you know, I wake up out of a coma.
Okay. Oh, I think I lost you again.
Oh no. Can you see me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yep.
Okay. Awesome. So yeah, my body flies through the air, my head hits the concrete, and I wake up 3 days later out of a coma with a life-changing brain injury. And keep in mind, like I have not completed SEAL training at this point, right? And for the record, I did not complete SEAL training, right? I did not wear the title of Navy SEAL. You know, would I have, like, I got through Hell Week, I did all that stuff, but you know, would I have, you know, chances are, like, you know, barring something crazy happening like this, I would have. But, you know, I never actually got to complete my training and go to war and do all the things I'd signed up to do. And so having this taken away from me, it's not like I quit, right? Quitting would be one thing that I'd have to deal with, but this was such a dramatic, you know, I'd like to think of it almost as the hand of God, right? Or fate or the universe or however you like to think about these things, but just some otherworldly force did not want me to continue down that path. Probably because I would have gotten killed trying to prove myself, if we're being honest about it. You know, I would have been the guy that ran out into gunfire to save someone, to prove how brave I would have, you know, I probably would have done something like that. So, you know, I wake up out of the hospital to find out that my brain's fucked up, my body hurts, and I'm not going to be able to stay in the military. So my dream is gone. Everything I'd worked so hard for is just taken away from me like that. And it's a reminder that life can change in the blink of an eye, right? You can be going along, you're on top of the world, everything is good. And then all of a sudden, rock bottom. And it can happen like, it takes an instant. On the other side of that, though, is you can be at rock bottom and you can be going through the shit and it can be dark and miserable and painful and things can change faster than you realize. So I never like to get these days, I'd never like to get too high or too low, because it's change is always around the corner and the lows are not going to last. The highs are not going to last. So might as well enjoy the ride as it goes. But at the time, this was absolutely devastating for me to lose everything. And I just went down into this downward spiral of anger and depression and despair and hopelessness and worthlessness. And like, you name it, it was a unbelievably dark period of my life. And I'm honestly surprised I survived it.
Wow. So how long were you in the hospital?
I was in a coma for 3 days and I was in the hospital for about 7.
Wow. You got incredibly lucky to be in a situation like that. Like, did you have I'm sure it was a huge concussion, right? Did you have to relearn anything? Or did you have, you know, issues with memory? Like, what was that period like?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, it's brain injuries are funny because at the time there was, you know, all they can do is manage your vitals and hope for the best, right? Fortunately, the pressure that would have been good, my brain swelled, everything that was happening from that would have caused more damage. Fortunately, the back of my skull cracked open and it let all the pressure out, along with a lot of my blood and fluids, but you know, oh well. So I got lucky in a lot of different ways that there was no real, like, you know, the fact that I'm here, much less can actually like have this conversation. I'm still blown away by it sometimes, but you know, it wasn't like this. You know, I had to reteach myself how to talk, you know, how to walk properly, how to get my mind under control, and really how to rebuild my life from the ground up. You know, imagine being 25 and kind of just thrown out on your ass for, you know, on your own to like go figure it out, right? And you know, combined with the depression, the anxiety, and the anger towards the guy who'd hit me, plus the realities of an actual brain injury, right? Brain injuries are super bad for you. Like, I don't recommend it for anybody listening here.
10 out of 10 would not recommend.
10 out of 10. Do not recommend. But you know, it's, so I like my impulse control, my mood, my personality, everything was just, I felt like I was living somebody else's life. I did not feel like myself. And in a lot of ways, I've actually never felt like myself since then. But I was faced with this task of who do I want to be? Right. And there was, the downward spiral lasted for about 10 years, you know, close to it. And ultimately, you know, the big, you know, I tried a lot of things, right? I got a girlfriend, got a job at the fire department. I tried a bunch of stuff, but nothing was working, right? This underlying feeling of hopelessness and brokenness was just there. Right. And I wondered if I would ever be happy, if I deserved to be happy, maybe there was something wrong with me. And things just, you know, big picture, things just got darker and darker and darker until one day I was laying on the couch and I was thinking about all the different ways that I could kill myself without it looking like a suicide. Because I didn't want to put my family through that. I didn't want to put people through that, but I also didn't want to go on living anymore. It was that bad. It just felt so, every day was a struggle. Every day was miserable. And it felt like there was no way out. Right. I know.
I've had those exact same thoughts, man. Like, mm-hmm. I feel you. I'm right there on that page with you.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you saying that. And that's the secret about this thing, right? Y'all go through this, right? My story is unique to me, but I'm not the only one to go through these experiences and these thoughts and these feelings, and we all go through it. And sometimes it's easy to feel like we're alone, we're the only person going through it when we are. But the reality is, everyone's going through it, right? And sometimes the happiest people, the guy on Instagram that looks super successful and happy, he's the most miserable person in the world because he's just really good at hiding it, right? And we forget these things, because when you're in the depression, when you're in the darkness, you get good at wearing this mask and pretending like everything is fine and smiling and telling people it's all good, I'm happy, life is great, look how great my life is, while inside you're dying. And that's just the reality that most people don't want to acknowledge, but it's the reality that a lot of people are living through. So when you're going through it, right? Maybe if you're listening to this, you're going through it right now, recognize that everyone goes through it and it ends, right? It doesn't last forever. Nothing lasts forever, but you're not the only one going through it, right? If other people have gone through it, if I can come back from a brain injury and live the life I'm living now, like, you can go through whatever you're going through. I promise.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great, you know, that's a great, you know, point to bring up, is that that's the whole reason why I wanted to start this podcast. You know, it's to let other people know that, that no matter what they're going through, it gets better. Like, no matter what they're going through, there's others that are out there. There's other men that they can speak to, that they can confide in, that they can open up to, and to explore different, you know, very, very dark personal issues. And, you know, unfortunately, men don't feel comfortable opening up about these things. We don't feel like we can talk about, you know, depression, anxiety, you know, suicidal thought, mental illness, you know, race identity, all those different types of really heavy topics that we don't feel comfortable opening up about. But the reality of it is, this is a human experience, right? We all have these, we've all thought these things at some point in our lives, you know, and if we get them out there and we start talking about the tough topics, that, you know, hopefully, you know, we can impact somebody's life. So,
yeah, and it only takes takes somebody to be brave and make that first move, right? I can't tell you how many times I've talked about feeling suicidal or talked about depression, or, and somebody randomly come, oh, I resonate with that. Well, I'm going through that. I've been going through that. I just went through that. Right. It gives people, you know, we have this idea that, like, on social media, everyone needs to look perfect and show the perfect life and show how awesome they are to try to compete with each other and show who can be the most awesome or whatever. But it's such a losing game, because there's always going to be someone that is richer, better looking, has a hotter girl, looks like, you know, looks cool, whatever it is, right? There's always going to be somebody that has more. There's always going to be somebody that has less. But when you, those people are not relatable, right? Superman is not relatable because he's too perfect, right? So I had to give him kryptonite to give him a weakness, right? And so when you, and a lot of men, I talk to guys all the time, there's this idea that, like, oh, if I'm vulnerable, if I share, if I, it gets weakness, right? Real men don't talk about these. Real men act tough. We bottle it up and thump our chest and tell the world how alpha we are. And I was like, joke about this, right? Like, the self-proclaimed alphas are actually the weakest, most fragile guys out there, because there's this facade, there's this inability to
it's a mask that they've built up, right? It's like, yeah, absolutely. It's almost like a counter charisma, almost like a counter, like a facade, you know? And, you know, if we can just, you know, come at it and just, you know, talk about whatever type of situation we're in and be open and be honest, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to have real dialogue, you know, and understand what, you know, which each of us is coming, you know, why we feel the way that we do, you know? So, yeah, I absolutely resonate with that.
Mm-hmm. And it's just being willing to have that dialogue, right? Having other people in your corner, right? Who are open and non-judgmental, but still are willing to give tough love, right? And hold you accountable. Like, those things are so important, but we've lost those in a lot of ways. But I think we talk about depression, we talk about anxiety, right? And as if there are these, like, mystical things floating out there, but there's real causes to these things, right? Depression isn't just this, like, magical affliction that you are cursed with, right? If you're depressed, your chances are you're not happy about your circumstances, right? You're in a situation and you feel that it's hopeless, or you can't get out of it, or you're not sure if you're capable of getting out of it. And it's natural to feel depressed in those situations, or sometimes bad things happen and you feel sad, right? Anxiety, people are like, oh, I have anxiety, my anxiety, my anxiety. But it's like, what are you thinking about? What are you worrying about? What are you imagining? What are these fears that you're projecting forward into the future? So a lot of times we as a society, we speak about these things as if they're these afflictions, but the reality is they come from within us. They come from within our circumstances. And as soon as you do something about it, right? As soon as you talk about it, as soon as you get a supportive group of guys who understands and has your back, right? Which is part of what I do. I have this community, this brotherhood of guys that we get it. We go through it together. We help each other and raise each other up. It's such an invaluable resource. And actually getting out there and doing something about it, right? Like, okay, you're depressed about your life. What are you doing about it, right? Are you sitting around smoking weed, watching Netflix all day, thinking about how shitty your life is? Like, yeah, you're going to be depressed for sure, right? Are you feeling anxiety because you're sitting around and you're wondering about all the things that could go wrong instead of just taking action and making something happen for yourself? Like, yeah, you're going to feel anxiety. But taking action alleviates these feelings, right? If you get out there and you do one little thing today to improve your situation, right? If you do one little thing to prevent that, your worst fear from happening, or if you do one little thing to make yourself a little bit better, those feelings will go away. And the more consistently you do them, the better you feel. And so action, you know, action and alignment with like-minded guys is the ultimate cure-all for depression, for anxiety, for these negative feelings. And for me, whenever I am feeling anxious, to me, that's a sign I'm not doing something I'm supposed to be doing, right? I've not been keeping my word to myself. I've been slacking. I've been underperforming. As soon as I start doing what I need to do, those feelings go away, right? Whenever I'm feeling depressed, I always ask myself, like, what can I do about it? You know, how is this situation that I'm in right now that I'm depressed about, how is it helping me to grow and learn and get better? And as soon as you start to look at it that way and see these things and take action on it, those feelings go away, because that's all they are. It's a feeling in your brain, right? It's a chemical in your brain that's causing you to feel the way that you're feeling, but you can change your brain chemistry. And this is what I spent a lot of time studying, you know, post brain injury, is how do I actually change my brain chemistry, rewire my brain, rewire my thoughts, and create a new life from the ground up. And it all just starts with thinking differently and taking different action.
For me, you know, I probably 3 years ago, roughly around 3 years ago, I kind of like hit, you know, I've always like throughout my entire life, and I have never been very vocal about anything, right? Anything that's happening, that's going on with me, I've never been kind of like the one to kind of like talk about my feelings or anything like that. I've always been kind of like the one that kind of bottles it up inside and doesn't, you know, I was kind of like on the opposite side of the spectrum where, you know, family, especially, you know, my dad growing up would be like, you know, therapies, you know, for, you know, it's real, like men don't go to therapy, real men don't go to therapy. If you're sad, suck it up. Like, you know, if you're bleeding, rub some dirt in it, you know, that kind of upbringing, right? Like anxiety is bullshit. Depression's bullshit. All of that's bullshit. We as men, our primary reason for being here is to provide. And so no matter what, we have to provide. And I was kind of, you know, I kind of grew up with that until probably and I would go through these cycles of depression, right? I would go through these cycles where I, you know, would wake up one morning and for like the next 2 weeks would just be in, you know, a funk where there's a gray cloud over my head at all times. And you go through different, you know, traumatic life events, and you just feel like the only way that you're going to get out of that, to stop that pain, is to no longer be here, right? So I've been there. I've gone through all that kind of stuff. And I got to say, for me, about 3 years ago, I was at a really, really low point in my life. And, you know, pretty much kind of like in a situation where I felt like, you know, I felt like the world was crumbling in around me. And I felt like I was on the verge of losing everything. And I went into a really dark place. And it was during that point where I just kind of like, I felt like I had one of two choices, right? I could either go out and seek out help, or I could just let this consume me and feel like that for fucking ever, right? So I went out, I started going to therapy, got prescribed meds for depression. Later on, I added on some meds for anxiety, and I've felt fantastic ever since. Yeah. I mean, for me, medication was a massive change, and also therapy, just being able to talk and kind of like take a step back and kind of look at your life through an outside lens, for me, was a massive impact. I don't know if you're pro medication or anything like that, but I, for me, it was a massive, massive change in my life.
Yeah. So I, you know, and I can relate to that, right? In the military, one of the most common phrases is suck it up, buttercup, right?
Yeah.
Real men do this, real men do that. You know, a lot of times these tropes are spit, you know, a lot of times the guys that say these things are also the guys that are drinking a bottle of whiskey a night just to go to sleep, right? So I guess, yeah, real men don't talk about their feelings. They just drink their pain away until they blow up, right? Like that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But
alcohol, and going back to your point, weed or any other kind of like substance that you put in your body, that's exactly what you're doing. You are self-medicating, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're looking for medicine. Now, it's not the prescribed medicine, but it's a medicine. Unfortunately, it's not the, you know, healthiest for you.
Oh yeah. Everything we do is to change the way that we feel, right? You're hungry, you eat food. You're thirsty, you drink water. You're tired, you go to sleep. Everything we do is a drug in that sense, that we're just trying to change our chemistry. And, you know, people self-medicate with weed, with alcohol, with porn, with video games, with scrolling through Instagram, with swiping through dating apps. Like, there's an infinite number of ways out there. Netflix binges. There's just so many ways out there to numb those unpleasant feelings and the things we don't want to feel. And, you know, I'm guilty of all of the above, right? It's normal. Again, it's normal, right? Whatever you think is shameful or whatever you think you're dealing with, it's normal. A lot of these things have been created to hijack our brain's natural chemistry, right? So that gives you this like false high, if you will. As far as, you know, prescription medication goes, I did not personally have a good experience with it. I would not say I think it's a decision to be made between an individual and their doctor. What I found was that medication would kind of treat the symptoms a little bit, and then it would stop working. So they had to take more. Mm-hmm. And then it would kind of work a little bit, and then I'd acclimate to it and have to take more. And at some point, I'm taking the maximum dosage of something that's in there rewiring my brain chemistry, and I'm not feeling like myself. I'm having weird side effects, but it's not dealing with the actual problem, right? Slapping a Band-Aid on top of the symptom instead of actually treating the underlying wound, if you will. So
how do you treat that wound?
That's where you've got to go in. You've got to get real with what it is. So I built out a process that, you know, cause everything is inside of us, right? And I actually have a very dramatic way that I went about it that I'll share in just a moment. But as far as how to really treat these wounds, like, you've got to get through, you know, depression, anxiety, doubt, fear, they don't come from nowhere, right? There's a source of it somewhere in your mind. There's a root cause, whether it's a belief, a thought, something in there is causing you to feel the way that you feel. So there's a 5-part process when I work with people, that I take guys through. And that's, first, we've got to identify it, right? You've got to understand what it specifically is causing you to feel the way that you feel, right? What is going on in your head? Are you saying, I'm a worthless piece of shit and my life has no value and I shouldn't even try because I'm just going to fail? Like, that's, you're going to feel depressed if that's what you're saying to yourself, right? Are you running, you know, are you thinking back on the last time you failed? So you're afraid to try again because I failed before. So I'm going to fail again. And everyone's going to laugh at me. So it's going to be painful, right? You're causing yourself anxiety, right? So you've got to get to the root cause of what's actually causing you to feel this way, because these things don't come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So first, we've got to identify it. Then we've got to make it go away, right? And I have a neutralizing process where basically you've got to see the bigger picture. It's really easy to get focused in on this sucks, that sucks, I'm going to fail that. Without seeing the bigger picture, though, it's really easy to get stuck in the negative. So everything in the universe is balanced, right? There is no up without down. There's no light without dark. There's no positive without negative. So everything in your life, and this is key. This is the key to life. This is the key to everything. Everything is balanced. So whatever you're viewing as negative, right? When you're saying my situation sucks, there's all these bad things are happening. If you only fix it on the negative, you're going to feel bad. But as soon as you pull out and you can see the bigger picture, and instead of, if you can ask yourself, what are the benefits of what I'm going through? How is this serving me? How is this helping me to grow? How is this helping me to get better? How is this making me tougher, more resilient? What are the benefits of the benefits, right? And the more you can dig into what are the upsides of the situation, it alleviates those feelings. Then when you can ask yourself, you know, okay, what if I wasn't going through this, right? What would I be missing out on by not going through these experiences? Right. And the more you can see the big picture and see how the thing you're going through right now is temporary, but it is serving you, it alleviates that negative feeling. And all of a sudden you can feel better because you can see big picture. This is actually making me get better. So there's a lot of different ways to do that with different emotions, but that's the high level overview. The next thing is, you've got to own it, right? If it's, The great secret, if you want to change your life, if you want to change anything about it, is recognizing that there's no they. There's no she, there's no he, there's no them. It's all me. And what I mean by that is if you are putting the blame or you're putting your life circumstances on anybody else outside of yourself, you are becoming powerless and you're making yourself a victim. And this is so important because most people give their power away. Most people think, oh, well, I was born into this situation. You know, a parent did this, teacher did this, classmates did this, society did this. And people put their, they give their power away and they make themselves into victims. And one of my biggest things that I fucking hate about society right now is everybody, there's like a badge of honor with being a victim. And there's just this race to, oh, no, I'm the most victimized. No, I'm the most victimized. And people wear that like it's a good thing, as if being a helpless victim is a source of pride. But that's just so backwards to me. But the moment you do that, the moment you put the blame outside of yourself, you become powerless to do anything about it. So the most important thing that you can do if you want to change your life is to actually own it and say, even if it's not my fault, right? Because let's say like the worst happened, right? Let's say somebody got molested or said something just horrible happened to them that truly was not their, they were not the cause of it. You know, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility, right? You were dealt what you were dealt. You got what you got. Now you are responsible for doing something with it, or you're going to implode and never be able to get out of it. So being able to take that ownership and be able to take that, you know, that responsibility is the moment you do that, right? Especially if we're talking to guys, like the moment you take full responsibility for your life circumstances and the moment you look around and you say, you know what, whatever this is, I'm in it, I created it, and now I'm responsible for getting out of it. And the moment you do that is the moment you grow up from being a boy to being a man and you take control of your life. And from there, you can do anything you want with it. But it starts with saying, it's not them, it's not they, it's not he or she, it's me. And that is just unbelievably critical. So once you own it, then you've got to actually take action on it, right? So if you're going through it right now, ask yourself, what are 3 things I can do? What are 5 things, 10 things? What's the number one most important thing that I can do to actually change my circumstances and get out of this, right? And then you got to go do that thing, right? And when you do the thing, the anxiety will go away, the depression will go away, and you'll start to feel empowered. And you'll start to feel like I'm actually in control and I can actually do something with my life, because action gets rid of those negative feelings. A lot of times when we have those negative feelings, and I get it, right? I've been so depressed, I didn't even think I could get up out of bed, right? I've been so depressed that I didn't even want to eat, shower. Like I've been in the absolute rock bottom where the next level down would have been death, right? I've been there. I know what that feels like. It doesn't matter. It's still your responsibility and it's on you to one foot in front of the other, one step at a time, right? And not all days are going to be winners. Not all days are going to be grand slam, home run, knock it out of the park days. But sometimes just getting out of bed and taking a shower is the best you can do. But getting out of bed and taking a shower is better than laying in bed and doing nothing all day. So take an action. It doesn't matter what it is. It's you got to do something, right? And one step a day, one little step in the right direction every single day, consistently over time, like it will change your life. You'll be waking up to a life that you didn't even know you could have. And it just starts with one little step every single day.
That's great.
And the last component, like the last, so you get out, you take action, you've identified it, you've neutralized it, you know, you've made the bad feelings go away, you've owned it, you said, I'm responsible for this, you've taken an action on it, you're doing something about it. The last piece, the cherry on top, is to be grateful for it. And to say, I'm thankful that this happened to me. I'm thankful that this happened for me and I'm going through this because it is making me better. It is making me stronger. It is making me smarter. It is making me tougher and more resilient. And when you can truly be grateful for the negative things you've gone through and all the pain, the suffering, the hardships, when you can truly be grateful for it all, it can't hurt you anymore. And now you've taken your power back and you can do anything you want from that state.
And this is kind of like a program that you kind of put together, right? You kind of like developed, right? And do you come in as a consultant? Do you come in as like a motivational speaker, a coach? Like from what angle do you kind of take to help people?
Yeah, I do a few different things. You know, on one level, I've got a mastermind, right? It's a brotherhood of guys who are committed to becoming the absolute best they can be and living up to their potential, where we have community and accountability and like really, really sharpen each other, right? To raise each other up, men making men better. A lot of times I work with guys like one-on-one or in a small group setting, right? If there's some specific stuff we need to work through. In which case I take, you know, the process I just walked you through, there's specific, like, that's kind of the overarching framework, but there's specific ways to do it with each emotion, right? The way we do that with anger is different than how we do that with depression, with how we do that with, so there's like specific ways that I'll do it depending on exactly what the person is dealing with, because it does take a targeted approach, right? We've got specific thoughts that are causing you to feel the way you're feeling. So we've got to actually like change those and get rid of those. But it's really, it tends to be on a case by case basis, right? If somebody needs some intensive personal one-on-one help, I do that. Sometimes people just need community and accountability, and that's powerful as well. So I do it all.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. You know, and kind of, you know, going back to medication, cause I wanted to kind of like touch on that, just because of, you know, everybody's experiences are so different, right? For me, the way that I kind of like to explain it is it almost feels like a governor, right? Like, you know, in a go-kart, you have a governor. It doesn't allow you to go past like 40 miles an hour or whatever it is. For me, it doesn't allow me to, even when I'm feeling those feelings, even when I'm feeling starting to feel depressed or anxious, it kind of doesn't allow me to go past a certain point. Right. It keeps me centered, doesn't allow me to go sink into that really, you know, into the quicksand, you know, doesn't allow it to get, you know, get a hold of my feet. Mm-hmm. So that's for me. But I mean, to you, I mean, and everybody's different depending on your brain chemistry. That's a great point.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, right? Again, I'm not anti-pharma. I'm not anti-medication. You know, I found it didn't work for me personally, but I know there's lots of people out there that have found success with it. And, you know, again, to each their own, right? I'm not for it. I'm not against it. If it works for you, it works for you. If it doesn't, there's alternative medicines and different ways of doing that. And so for me too, the medicine that really changed my life was psychedelic toad poison. Now, When I was at my darkest, you know, when I was laying on the couch, you know, the medication wasn't working.
Nothing in my life was working.
Oh yeah. This is a wild experience. But, you know, at my darkest, right, I was talking earlier about how it's important for guys to reach out and ask for help. You know, it's the hardest thing in the world for a man to reach out and ask for help, especially from another man. You know, a lot of times we think it makes us lesser than, it makes us weak, or showing vulnerability is bad, and we're going to get whatever. Like, we get all these things that go on in our minds as to reasons why we shouldn't do it. But there's actually power, right? There's massive power in being real and acknowledging that I've tried this myself, I can't do this myself, and I do need help, right? And so for me, that came to reaching out to my mentor. I told him, hey, I'm in trouble. I need some help. I don't know what to do. I've tried everything and none of it's working. So, you know, next thing I know, 2 days later, I'm down in Mexico on this veterans retreat for veterans with brain injuries. And, you know, now I never really got into drugs, right? I had like an ecstasy party phase and, you know, dabbled a little bit here and there, but I never really like got into it. And I always thought psychedelics were like for, you know, hippies and losers and burnouts. And, you know, I kind of associated with that. Right. Thank you. 70s propaganda. But next thing I know, I'm down on this retreat in Mexico and I'm taking the world's most powerful psychedelics like on the planet. Right. The first one was called ibogaine, which is this root from Africa. And, you know, it's kind of like a personalized, customized version of hell just for you. And it lasts all night. So this was like 14 hours of reliving just the most painful, miserable parts of my entire life and just getting to relive them all back to back to back to back to back and just seeing all the darkness and bringing it back up and reliving it. And that was a really shitty experience, but I also needed to see it because if I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't have had the transformation that I had and the perspective shift. So fortunately,
does that have the same effect on everyone? Like, yeah, it just, for whatever reason, opens up those dark memories back, you know, it gets you to face them head on, or how does this work?
Not necessarily. So everyone's, and I always hesitate to talk about, like, I know they're getting more and more popular. I always hesitate to talk about my specific psychedelic experiences. Because with these medicines, when done properly, right? And I'm very big emphasis on done properly, because there's a lot of idiots out there that are irresponsible with these plants and these substances. But when done responsibly and when done with the right preparation and integration afterwards, these can be life-changing experiences. So everyone's journey is going to be different, right? But the end result often tends to be the same. So I've seen, you know, after I went through this retreat, I spent 2 years volunteering and really apprenticing with the facilitators and seeing hundreds of success stories go through. And everyone has a different experience, but the end result tends to be the same. So what this particular medicine does is, you know, an emphasis on the word medicine, right? This is not drugs. You're not doing this to get fucked up. This is medicine and it's treated accordingly, right? It's administered in a medical setting while you're hooked up to a heart monitor with an IV in. It's medical doctors on staff, nurses. It's a full-on medical procedure, right? But that puts you into the psychedelic experience. So, you know, it brings up whatever it needs to bring up, right? We a thing we say often is it's going to give you what you need, right? Not what you want, but what you need. So my experience was unique to me. I've heard other people having similar experiences. Some people have had positive, rosy experiences. You know, one of the SEALs that I knew who I thought he'd have a bad experience because he went through some really bad public, he got kind of paraded around in public for a year or two for some stuff. And I thought this guy was going to have a really bad experience, but he ended up having just like a very beautiful, peaceful experience. So everyone's different, right? It tends to be darker for most people. So that was the case for me. Fortunately, afterwards, you know, the doctor that created this treatment protocol, it's a two-part treatment. So the first part was the Ibogaine, which brings up all the dark stuff and just a miserable experience. Don't recommend it unless you're like about to end your own life and this is like the last resort, like truly. That's where I was when I went into this. But the second part of this is they give us a medicine called Bufo, also known as 5-MeO-DMT, not to be confused with regular DMT. But what it really is it's a psychedelic toad poison that you smoke through a medical grade crack pipe. And it's nicknamed the God molecule, right? That's just what people call it. And after going through the experience, I will say that's a very appropriate name. It took me to, you know, if Ibogaine was hell, this was heaven. And it just was such a transformative experience where I just opened me up in different ways and opened up my mind and my perspective. And I just had this moment of, instead of being inwardly focused on the negative, I flipped it and I went outward. And I realized there was a whole world of people out there and people who needed my help and people who I was capable of helping. And, you know, I always say, like, I wanted to die, right? Like at the time when I went into that, I thought I wanted to kill myself. But what I really wanted was just to end my life. And I did, right? That old me, you know, I ended that life that I was living and I came out of that reborn and started a new life. And the big takeaway, the big thing that I came out of that with was, you know, I can't go back and change what happened, but I can start right now and choose where it goes next. And that's how I built the framework of the actual, like the coaching work that I do with guys, which I call the Shark Method. And it starts with specific, right? Get specific on what's the actual outcome you want to do, right? Instead of being stuck on the past and everything that went wrong, like let's think to the future, right? Where do you want to be, right? When you're 100, looking back on your life, where do you want to be? Who's there with you? What have you achieved and accomplished? Like, what does that life actually look like? Then we get into habits, right? What habits do we need to create, install, break, right? Your daily habits, the things you do every single day that seem like they don't matter are setting a trajectory. It's either going to be towards a life you love or a life that you are full of regret because you didn't live up to your potential. So habits are so underplayed for how effective they are and how important they are that it's so huge. So get the habits dialed in, accountability. Like, I don't care who you are. You cannot do it alone. I thought I could do it alone and I almost killed myself. So having accountability, having guys like, and not just the, you know, the losers that you smoke pot with, right? Like you've got to be around high caliber guys who will hold you accountable and raise you up and call you out on your bullshit with love, you know, and encourage you to be better and to do better. You've got to have those people in your life that will hold you accountable, right? You've got to learn to hold yourself accountable, but it can't be done alone. I've tried. And it's, you know, even if you think you can do it alone, it's not going to happen, right? It doesn't work like that. So accountability. The next thing was like recharging, right? Actually like getting the brain chemicals balanced and doing fun stuff so that life was actually enjoyable, right? We don't want to just work and grind and hustle all the time. Like, life is meant to be enjoyed. And if you're not having fun, what is the point? So taking some time to intentionally rest and recharge and do the things that fill your cup and make life meaningful for you are critical to growth. And for as hard as you want to work, as hard as you want to grind, it's equally important to balance that with resting, with recharging, and with fun. So if you ever feel like you're in a rut, if you feel like you're stuck, you're probably not having enough fun. And then the last piece of it is KPIs for salespeople. You'll know that. But it's just keeping track of progress, right? Measurable, tangible progress so that you can see numerically without a shadow of a doubt that it's working. And that's what I built into the community that I run, the coaching programs I do. You know, we're dealing with mental stuff. We're dealing with intangible stuff here, like feelings and emotions. But we can still quantify it, right? We can quantify how intense it is and how often you're feeling it. And when we measure progress, you can actually see improvement. You can see measurable improvement across all sorts of different areas of life. And we've actually proven that, like mathematically, we have the data that proves this, is that when you get rid of the fear and the anxiety and the anger and the doubt and the frustration and all those negative emotions, you make more friends, you make more money, you feel more fulfilled, you feel more confident, you have more energy. Like, we have the data to back this up. There's a direct correlation between getting rid of these negative emotions and getting all the things that you want in life. So it sounds so simple to say, you know, because we get used to living in these states, right? We get used to living with depression or anxiety or fear or self-doubt or guilt or shame or whatever it is, without realizing that when you pull those things out of the way, like, it just, you have so much more ability to be more, to do more, to grow. And the, like, it's cliche as it sounds, you know, I found this for myself, like, the biggest thing holding me back was me. It was the 6 inches between my ears was the biggest block in preventing me from having everything I wanted in life. And as I learned to manage that and get rid of those and really take control of my mind, my life results speak for themselves.
I love that. I love that. If I didn't have a final thought, I would totally end the podcast right there because it was just incredible. But as we discussed, we always have trying to have this final thought on Learning Man, and for the final thought, it's always, you know, something that can really impact somebody, right? Knowing what you know now, right? What would you say to your younger self, right? What would you say to your younger self on how to deal with anxiety, how to deal with changing the way that you think? What would you say to the, 13-year-old Zach?
It's a good question. So the 13-year-old Zach, I would say three things. One is that it gets better. And the more you do, the more action you take, the more you work that way, the more you do, the better it gets. Right? The more action you take towards creating the life you want, right? The more you put yourself out there socially, the more you get in the gym and stay active, the more you put effort into taking care of your health and your diet and these things that really influence the way that you feel, the more effort you put in, the better it gets. And I think this is how a lot of us get started on self-development, self-improvement, is we realize that if we put some effort into working on ourselves, then life gets a little better. I was consistent with going to the gym and eating better and life gets better. I feel better. Oh no, I've been down. I've been drinking a lot. I've been eating a bunch of food I should be eating. I feel worse, right? A lot of times it doesn't, it's not rocket surgery, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing I would just say is it gets better if you make it better, but it doesn't get better if you don't do anything. Like, nobody's coming to save you, right?
Right.
Nobody's coming to save you. Nobody.
Right.
This is harsh but true. Nobody cares about you. Genuinely. Like, the world doesn't care about you. And especially as men, we do not have any inherent value. If you don't believe me, go downtown and look at all the homeless men on the street that nobody gives a fuck about, right? They're growing by the day. The reality is, if you want to be valuable as a man, if you want to have a good life, if you want to make money, if you want to have the girls you want, if you want to have the lifestyle, the car, the body, all that stuff, that whatever it is you want, right? The travel, the whatever it is for you, you've got to go out and make it happen because nobody's going to bring it to you. Nobody's going to show up and give it to you. I know we've been told that, if I just want it bad enough, it'll just happen for me. You know, I'm entitled. I think I should just get it because I wanted it really bad. But like, that's not how the world works, right? You've got to go out and get it. So if you want the body, if you want the health, you've got to get your ass in the gym. You've got to eat healthy. You've got to take that action. If you want the girls, you've got to learn social skills. You've got to go out and make friends and be somebody that people want to be around, right? If you want to make money, you've got to develop skills that pay and find ways to give value to the world. If you want inner peace, you've got to find a way to get control of your mind and calm things down, because nobody's going to come and do it for you. The last thing I would say to 13-year-old Zach or anybody out there is you cannot do it alone. No man is an island. The only times we're truly alone, you know, you're born alone and you die alone, right? That's the first moments. But from there, anything you want, everything you want in life comes from other people. Everything, right? If you want money, you got to get it from other people. Yeah, if you want relationships, companionship, sex, it comes from other people, right? If you want meaning and purpose, it comes from other people, right? You can get in shape by yourself. That's about it. But everything you want that really brings fulfillment in life comes from other people. And so you cannot do it alone, right? This idea that like, I'm going to be a self-made man and do it all by myself is just, it's a myth. It's an absolute myth. And if you ask the most successful people, they give the most, they help out the most, and they have other people in their lives. So as cliche as it sounds, you know, they say you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. That is a fact. If you hang out spending time with guys that are smoking pot and doing nothing and playing video games and ogling baddies on Instagram and, you know, choosing porn over real life and whatever it is, like, if you're hanging out with people like that, you're going to end up just like that. I talked to a guy the other day, a dating student, who was like, well, you know, my friends just like to sit around and complain about girls and complain about that. Like, get the fuck away from those people. They will drag you down. They will crush your dreams, and you will never grow if you're around people like that. Alternatively, if you're around people who are in shape, who are good with women, who have good finances going on, who are committed to their growth, their education, their becoming better, if you spend time around those people, you will become one of them. Now let's say, okay, I don't know where to find those people though. I'm still living at home, or I'm still living in my hometown, or I'm in a situation like, get it, totally get it, right? But you can find people online. You can find anybody through the internet. You can join a group, right? This is like my group has, I'm not saying join my group if you want to, but we have people from all over the world or all over the country that come together for the same cause and purpose, right? So you can find your tribe. You can find your people online. You know, you can listen to mentors, right? You can read books from the greats that came before you, learn how they think, learn how they operate, and, you know, really, really lift yourself up that way. But you've got to be careful about what you let into your head, because your inputs determine your outputs, right? If you put garbage into your mind, you're going to get garbage results. If you put garbage into your body's going to feel like shit, and it's going to break down. And it's a very simple mathematical formula, but you just got to watch your inputs, watch what you're letting into your life, and don't be afraid to hold yourself to high standards.
I love it.
The journey is the last thought too, is the journey of growth is painful. It's difficult. It's lonely. It is unbelievably worth it, right? The harder the challenge, the more difficult it is, the more rewarding it is on the other side. Right? And if it was easy, you wouldn't value it, right? If it was easy, then everybody would do it. Everybody would be the same levels of success, and it wouldn't be special. It wouldn't mean anything. So if you're going through it and you're like, this is hard, good. It's supposed to be hard. The hardness is what's making you better. It's making you stronger. It's making you more resilient, and it's building you up to something bigger and better, but you've got to go through it. The only way out is through. But I promise you, if you sit around, if you do nothing, if you feel sorry for yourself, if you wallow, it's not going to get better. I promise you that. So one foot in front of the other, just keep going.
Steel sharpens steel.
True that.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for your time. It was so great to meet you and to learn about your story and your takes on life. And you know, it was just fantastic to hear you speak, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. This is great. I appreciate it. We'll have to link up here in Austin one of these days.
Let's do it.
Listen. Man, thank you so much. We'll chat soon.
And thank you so much for listening to the Learning Man podcast. My name is Omar Cantu. I could not thank you enough for joining me on this journey. If you enjoyed what you heard and would like some more of that content, we're going to be dropping new episodes every Friday. So make sure and hit that follow button wherever you listen to your podcast and write us a review because it really does help the channel. Share what topic you want to tackle next or maybe the name of a guest that you want to hear from. Thank you again for joining in this journey. It means so much to me.